Well, good afternoon, everyone. Is it morning still? Is it morning? Morning. Good morning, everybody. And thank you very much. I want to start out just by relaying greetings from Dr. Judy Monroe, who is the deputy director at CDC and oversees local, state, territorial, and tribal work at the CDC, and really wanted to be here. But as you can imagine, the Ebola crisis has really created an enormous amount of work, and she's focused particularly on that and the coordination with our partners at various levels of health in throughout the country. When we designed this session, I was at Northeastern, and so my presentation was going to be focusing on the work that I was doing there, and Dr. Monroe was going to focus on CDC. So as you heard, this is kind of a mashup, and you're going to see both presentations blended together. And what I'm going to focus on to complement the discussions that have already taken place are three points. The first one is going to be looking at the relationship of the issue around zip code versus genetic code as it relates to the delivery of healthcare and the connection of healthcare to the broader issues in the lives of individuals in the community. Second, I'm going to talk some about the issues related to sustainability and scale. For those of you who are thinking about, well, where does the funding come from? It's great when there is funding and support and modeling of the ways to move ahead by RWJ and by the California Endowment. And I think we're learning so much from their leadership, and we want every community to have access to that. So we want to support that, but complement it with thoughts about sustainability and scale. And then the third thing I'm going to talk about is some of the specific programs and activities that are taking place, particularly at two federal agencies, the Centers for Disease Control and CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, because there's some real opportunities now to think about how to link that federal funding to the kind of activities we've heard about so far. And I would just start by saying, you know, we haven't yet won the battle with regard to access to health care. And access to health care is very much related to where you live. We still know the people who remain uninsured are disproportionately likely to be low income and people of color. So we should celebrate the fact that we've got 18 million more Americans now that have gained coverage through the ACA. And that the uninsurance rate has dropped. We really need to support that and make sure that there's full implementation of the Affordable Care Act. But right now, there are 42 million people who remain uninsured. And the thinking is that even over the next several years, if we moved on the same path, independent of whether or not there was a scaling back, there would be 30 million Americans who didn't have health care coverage. So we need to not forget about that. And a human reminder is always a good thing, since this is basically about people, as we've heard so far. And this is, you know, an average example of what might occur in a community with limited resources. Ms. Edwards doesn't have insurance, so doesn't see her doctor except when she has an emergency. She's hasn't had a physical in 5 years and has some behaviors that are not the healthiest ones. She's already been diagnosed with some health problems. And, you know, lack of money has meant she doesn't always take her medication. But it's not just about her health. These are the contributing factors that also affect her overall health, from her income to the safety of her neighborhood, to the condition in her housing, to the family members and the issues that are going on in her family as well. And so what does she need? Well, clearly she absolutely needs health insurance, and health insurance will make an enormous difference in terms of her having access to preventive care, regular clinical care, and her medications. But health care insurance is a necessary but insufficient need to address the underlying issues, and these are just some of the other things that she needs and in order to address her overall health. And we've kind of talked about what those are, but this is thinking about those in terms of doctors saying, oh, you need to work on your weight, and so eat better, exercise more, and there are specific obstacles, obviously, to her ability to do that. Same thing for the other health issues that she's facing. These relate a lot to the public health pyramid. I'm sure you've all seen that before, that Dr. Frieden at CDC has has presented, and that is the notion that the bottom of the pyramid, if we focus on the socioeconomic factors, that's going to have the biggest impact on health overall. If we can't directly focus on those at all times, then the one up from that, the changing of the conditions and the context, make the biggest difference. So always thinking, can we work at the lowest level of the pyramid to reach the largest numbers of people is important. And now, as I said, there are some really significant opportunities that are created by the passage of the Affordable Care Act, by other healthcare reform initiatives that are taking place in states around the country, and by payment reform. And so I want to share with you what some of those are. I'm going to present those as if they're in three different buckets. So the first bucket is the traditional clinical approaches. And here what I'm talking about is access to clinical care where the focus is on prevention. And at CDC, just for example, the focus has been on these particular areas, working on heart disease reduction through taking aspirin when people are at risk, blood pressure control, cholesterol control, stopping smoking, using health information technology and clinical interventions. And this gives you some sense of how much more we need to go in terms of those. This is the percentage of people who should be taking aspirin every day to prevent heart attacks. Less than half of the population in the country are doing that. Less than half of the people with high blood pressure are on medications to control that. About a third of the people with cholesterol are effectively managed. And in terms of people who are trying to quit smoking, only about 23% are actually getting help. So we can't forget that we really need to work on improving these, and that's linked to zip code availability, insurance, and the access to care. There's also some interesting things that are going on now in terms of stretching the limits of what's considered to be reimbursable clinical care that moves us a little bit closer to thinking about the possibility of insurance paying for activities that are beginning to link to the social determinants of health and getting outside of the clinical setting. And they include things like paying for the activities of community health workers. And community health workers can be both patient-specific, for example, visiting the home of a patient, a family that has a child with moderate to severe asthma, and working on eliminating the triggers in the home, looking at mold and mildew reduction, paying for things like mattress covers, vacuum cleaners, and air purifiers. We're now seeing insurance plans, both Medicaid and commercial insurers, that are looking seriously at the possibility of incorporating coverage for those kinds of services in insurance, particularly as we move from fee-for-service to value-based contracting. So as much as possible, getting a sustainable source of funding from insurance to pay for, say, community health workers is a good thing for us to be working on. And there are some opportunities now. There's actually a possibility Medicaid programs can adapt their annual plans so that they can allow for coverage of community health workers if they make a case. Other examples of the kind of things that can take place in terms of linking health to social determinants is what related to what Beatrice and Michelle were saying, is that we're talking about building people's independence and power. One way of thinking about that is through such things as chronic disease self-management, where patients actually get the individual training and develop the skills at a community level so that they have a greater control over their overall health. That's a possibility too now, that we can work to get insurance coverage for that, so that you could have models of that kind of multi-session counseling available at a community setting, paid for by insurance. And that would be important, again, in terms of the scalability issue. The third bucket is the one that really moves us out of the clinical setting entirely and into the community. And here the question is there a possibility of redirecting some of the funds that have historically been used for healthcare into changing some of the conditions at a community level? This is a bigger stretch, as you might guess, in terms of making the case to health plans. and large providers, but it's not impossible, and there's some good potential activities there. For example, CDC has gone back, as I go back to this Million Hearts campaign that we're involved in, there's a piece of it that focuses, I'd mentioned earlier, on those ABCs, aspirin, blood pressure control, etc. But there's a piece of it that supports very strongly the idea of changing the conditions in the community so that people are much more likely to live healthier lives. And that includes such things as regulations and other approaches to reduce smoking through bans on smoking, increasing taxes, sodium reduction through working with industries to eliminate, to reduce the amount of sodium in foods, and a trans fat elimination through a variety of approaches as well. This is just an example of that kind of work, which can be coordinated from a community level and community action in the kind that has been talked about, the Beatrice and Michelle, in New York City resulted in these very significant reductions in smoking in a short amount of time by advocating for things like increased taxes on cigarettes. You get immediately a sharp reduction in terms of smoking. I'll mention a couple of programs that are very strong examples of working at the community level that the Centers for Disease Control is supporting. One of those is called the Partnerships to Improve Community Health, or PITCH, and this is a new program that was established just in the last year. There are 39 awardees, and it focuses on grants that are looking at, again, the galvanizing of community activity that we've talked about already to try to change some of the conditions in those communities. A second important program that we're involved in funding is the Racial and Ethnic Approaches to Community Health, or REACH, program. This has been a program that's been around for a number of years. We thought we were going to actually lose it and lose the funding over the years, but it's been the funding for it has been secured, and it's been re-released for funding, and there are 49 awardees now. And again, that the focus of REACH is thinking about working in the communities of color around changing conditions. In general, though, I might say that there are at least two different approaches to how do you fund these kind of efforts, the changing the community type efforts. There is the traditional way that you fund public health to do it in order to get to some level of scale at the local, state, or federal level. But this new approach is to think, are there other sources of funding? Could we tap into insurance? Could we think about other new innovative ways? And so I'll mention a couple of the new innovative ways. One innovative approach that has occurred in Massachusetts and other states are looking at this is the idea of creating a prevention trust. The prevention trust in Massachusetts and in many of the other models that are being considered now draws its funding from the large insurers and the large providers. There's essentially an assessment that's taken against them. Can be against the reserves of the insurers or a percentage of the net operating costs of the large providers. In Massachusetts, it created a fund of $60 million in 2012, and it was to be used over a four-year period, so it didn't say you had to spend $15 million, but you can conceptualize this as being a $15 million investment. And the idea behind it was to fund innovative collaborative efforts that link community to clinical care to demonstrate that those kind of collaborations can not only result in better health, but can actually result in reduced resources being spent in clinical care. So thinking again, but here the idea was don't rely on a year-to-year appropriation. Instead, tap into the resources of the health plans, the insurers, and the large providers. Others are looking at this as well. I think I was just going to mention also, people are looking at the model of social impact bonds. It's also a new model. It's been tried out in Fresno and New York City, not always for health, but the idea behind it is get the private sector to invest in making an improvement, and if they are successful, then the government, so it gets back to the government, will actually pay them an extra amount for demonstrating the efficacy of a particular intervention. It's being looked at a lot The efficacy of it is hasn't been tested yet, but people are looking at that as, again, one more creative approach to thinking about new resources. So the other large option is tapping in on a regular basis to health insurance and clinical funding. Here I would highlight what's a major initiative that's taking place with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid that's known as the State Innovation Grants. How many of you know about that, about SIM? So SIM, look into it in two of your states. These are large grants by the Innovation Center at CMS, a center that was created with billions of dollars by the Affordable Care Act. They're experimenting with different approaches. They've gone through one round and they're about to announce a second round. And this is big money. Some states may get as much as $100 million from a SIM award to do major transformation of the way that primary care is provided and insurance is offered, moving again to patient-centered medical homes and to value-based contracting instead of fee-for-service. But they require, because there has been a concerted effort by CMS with support from CDC, they now require a population health component. And so there's very creative thinking about, okay, if we're really redesigning the way that health insurance works in those SIM states, you can throw into the mix the possibility of saying, let's give a financial incentive through those insurance contracts to work at the community level to change the conditions so that there actually will be some ongoing support for doing that that's built into reimbursement instead of just with limited funding at a community level. It's an experiment too, but those of you who live in those states, please become involved as much as you can in the SIM planning because there's great potential there. Another area where there's potential is working with hospitals, the non-profit hospitals, around another Affordable Care Act requirement that the non-profit hospitals had to do a community health needs assessment and then move to filling those gaps. In some communities, this has, I think, frankly, not been something that they found to be promising as of yet. They found good community health plans, but not much reinvestment by the hospitals. But in other communities, they've really seen a change in terms of the hospital orientation, so there has been a willingness of hospitals to consider investing more in changing conditions, thinking more about prevention, investing in everything from housing to safety. So it offers promise. And then there's some innovative Medicaid waivers. You probably wouldn't think that you would see Texas and Massachusetts offered as two examples, since they're such different states with regard to their perspective on healthcare reform. But both are involved in innovative approaches that have allowing them to pay for some interesting activity that pushes again beyond the walls of the clinical setting. Massachusetts for paying in terms of paying for community health workers to work in the homes of families with asthma, pay for things like vacuum cleaners. In Texas, there's actually some interesting community-based, city-based organizing that's going on to identify the key health issues and mobilize people. And I would just offer, here's the three states. Anybody here from these three states? Raise your hand. So there's interesting work going on in Oregon, Vermont, and Maryland, and I could list many other states where there really has been an effort to think, if we're reorganizing our healthcare delivery system, expanding health insurance, thinking about payment reform, can we push beyond the traditional thinking on healthcare and begin to have that investment flow to the community level as well? I won't go into these specific ones now. I think I would just close by saying, going back to Ms. Edwards, who I started with, what we really know she needs is she needs health insurance and regular access to her doctor, counseling, treatment, and medication. We can't forget that she needs that in her community without high copays and deductibles. But she also needs supports at the community level for services. So in her case, she needs supports around ways to incorporate into her lifestyle, better ways to exercise or to eat well. She needs home visits. She has asthma, so she needs help in eliminating the triggers in her house and the risks that exist in her house that may be related to deteriorating housing. And then finally, she just needs to live in a healthier community so that, as Michelle says, she doesn't have to wake up every morning and say, oh, I want to be healthy, but just the conditions in her community, from safety so that she can walk easily around the block a few times if she wants exercise, to parks where she can enjoy being outside, to stores that are available with affordable food that's healthy. And those kind of conditions require that we work at a neighborhood level and think about how to get the resources we need to make those significant changes. Thanks.